explain those Badlands. That's a hell of a name.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
The cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy. I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality. The cult of personality.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
But the people are retarded.
Yes, they are.
Oh, I dropped my pen. Yes.
See?
Yes.
See?
Yes, they are. I am, I love it. I love that cold open. It suits me today. The Colorado legislature is meeting on a Sunday under the Demon Dome to disarm the people of Colorado. And I'm very grateful for this show and the timing of this show and the fact that we're doing it live. Because it meant I could turn that off.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for.
I'm super ragey about it. It's going to come through. We're not talking about that. Okay. We're just going to do it without a pen. We're going to do the show without a pen.
Screw the pen.
Yeah. So we're talking about metrics, and we talk a lot on this show about how the world powers like to redefine metrics. The CPI came out, CPI and PPI came out last week. Consumer price index and producer price index, for people who don't know what I'm talking about. And right before those new metrics dropped, there was a story that broke about how there was like a group of super user economists that the Fed works with and gives special information to. And how that super user group was told that the weighting on single family home economic data was going to be weighted differently in terms of the, you know, the coming economic metrics that then dropped a couple days after that story. And it happens a lot. They perfected this, I think, during the Obama administration, changing the economic metrics. For example, unemployment, removing people who had stopped looking for work out of the unemployment number, you know, denominator, to make it look better, make the ratio come out better. That's what they do. It's what the regime does. And the U.S. Regional leadership of the global regime, or, you know, the EU regional leadership of the European part of, you know, European regional leadership of the regime. That is, I think, what we're dealing with. And we see that in the metrics. Certainly, they're now straight up talking about how we want to change the way that business success is measured. We're going to get into that tonight.
Yeah, they're not even like really hiding it at all.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to change all of this now because we want to, because we can. Basically.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting that they're saying it now. I don't know if you have that tweet from the World Economic Forum. If you pulled that in, the screen grab of the tweet.
I have the article. I missed the tweet. Give me one second. I can grab
it. Yeah, it's in the Telegram if you want to pull it in. But basically, they're saying this out loud now, We want to change the way that business success is measured. We're going to do it on impact versus traditional metrics, et cetera, et cetera. Like I said, we're going to get into it. But they've been doing this for decades. They've been moving the goalposts and changing the measures of success and reweighting certain variables throughout that to bring about the world that they want to see. It's why climate metrics are so important. Not because the majority of people are concerned and think that we need to, you know, eliminate fossil fuels or embrace wind globally. Not because there is a demand for it or because the people globally want such things.
No.
But because they want them. The climate is the macro psyop that allows them to centralize power globally and tell everybody else what they are and aren't allowed to do.
Well, remember, apparently, you know, climate change is causing solar eclipses now. So, you know, this is the stupidity and the outright bravado and like, no, we're just going to keep plowing forward with our bullshit, no matter how absurd it is that we have to deal with on a daily freaking basis. Here's that tweet, friend.
Yeah, we want to change the way company performance is measured and valued. Leading companies are taking action and calling for a common language for impact. Learn more at weforum.org. And this one is in collaboration with PwC and SAP. And like I said, they've been doing this for a very long time. They've been changing the way company performance is measured and valued for a long time. They're just telling you about it now.
Right.
But the great place, I'm going to use Great Place to Work survey as an example, because no matter which firm I was at, no matter which client I was working at, Great Place to Work survey was very important. The multinational corporations care very much about being on that ranking of great places to work. It drives loads of B2B business for them. And so they really want it. It allows them to raise money, to make their shareholders happy, blah, blah, blah. So the Great Place to Work survey evolved over the past, you know, couple of decades, certainly the past decade, to include lots of metrics that employees don't really care about. But anybody who understands survey design knows that you can design a survey to elicit pretty much any kind of outcome that you want. And that is what we see with Great Place to Work survey. And it's now become, it's a dependency. Businesses strive after and try to achieve that Great Place to Work ranking based on the metrics of the globalists, not the metrics of their own people. And then the cycle perpetuates itself.
Right. It's the very definition of a vicious cycle. And of course, they perpetuate it on purpose. Like, they keep us in the vicious cycle while they themselves ignore it and go about and live lives the way they want while they... Yeah, it's like you said, all this stuff they're doing, it's not like people all over the globe asked for it. It's not like there were this huge outcry of populations all over the world going to their representatives or their governments and saying, hey, we need this. That just didn't happen. These people just arbitrarily decided this is what we're going to do. All right, deal with it.
Yeah. And telling us that we also talk a lot on this show, and I think all Badland shows, about fabricated consent, right? Fabricating what the people want through the pervasiveness of the message, the narrative. I always go back to pandemic preparedness, because the regime think tanks were talking about pandemic preparedness back in 2011, probably before that. But the first mention that I have is Booz Allen Hamilton, I believe the largest provider of services to government entities, management consulting and technology consulting and risk consulting services to government entities. They were talking about pandemic preparedness in 2011. In 2015, PwC came out with their global CEO survey, and one of the thought leadership papers that was put out in 2015 was that 51% of CEOs were most concerned about pandemic preparedness in 2015.
Mm.
Which begs the question, why was everybody so unprepared if, you know, 5 years before the pandemic, everybody was super worried about it. You would think that we would have been prepared for it, but apparently not.
It's like one of these is not like the other, right? Like, yeah. I remember back in the conspiracy circles back in that time, it was a thought that that kind of thing was going to be coming too, because it was like 08 or 09, right? I think it was 09 when they tried the whole swine flu thing and tried to scare the shit out of everybody with that. And then I think in 2013, there was like a mild Ebola scare. And it's like, I remember around 2010.
H1N1 was in there too at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. They threw all that shit in there at some point. And I remember in the conspiracy forums at the time, people were openly discussing it. It just felt like they were poking and prodding and testing and seeing the responses, and that there was going to be a big one coming. But of course, the details back then of like the corporations involved that you just mentioned and things to that degree, we didn't know any of that. But even back then, people were like, they're gaming something. Something is coming down the pipeline. And we saw that with COVID and subsequent lockdowns and so forth and so on. We're all well aware of what happened during that nightmare.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, do us a favor and hit that thumbs up button. Helps us out a lot. It drives a lot of our metrics at both on Rumble and on Badlands. If you're watching us on Twitter or Pilled is the other one. We're now on Pilled, this show, which is very exciting. I don't know how to see that chat, so I don't know if there's people chatting, and I really want to talk to the people in the chat. So maybe after today's show, you can show me how to do that, because I can see the Rumble chat, and then the Twitter chat gets brought into StreamYard, but I don't think we can see the Pilled one. And I really want to be able to do that. But welcome to everybody watching, and wherever you're watching, please hit the like button, the thumb, the heart, whatever it is for you. It helps us out quite a bit. So we're going to talk about metrics tonight, and it's going to be super exciting. Why don't we do our first couple sponsors?
Yes, we shall do our first couple sponsors, because I know I enjoy talking about Love Litter, because they've like, we have a lot of cats in our house. Well, we have 3 cats now. It used to be a significant more, but it's like you always deal with that cat urine odor, and nothing I could do would help beat that odor back. And that's like, I don't like let litter boxes go for a week without scooping them. It's like a daily thing. It's just a thing if you own cats, right? Like sometimes if you own dogs, you're gonna have to deal with wet dog odor. It's just a thing. But nothing helped until I found Love Litters. And allow me to go ahead and tell you folks a little bit about Love Litters. Attention friends, with purring pals and feathered friends, say hello to Love Litters, 100% pure kiln-dried wood, free from chemicals, and oh so kind to Mother Earth. No dust, no mess, and no toxins, just a lightweight solution that's gentle on your wallet and even gentler in your home. Our biodegradable litter is crafted from wood destined for landfills, giving it a new purpose in your pet's life. Cats love it. Our astonishing formula works like magic to neutralize that notorious cat urine odor, keeping your home pine fresh and welcoming. For bird lovers, it zaps moisture from bird droppings, crumbling them away, all while being safe if pecked at or ingested. For reptiles and critters, too, our mix is crafted to dilute the pine scent, ensuring those little lungs stay happy and healthy. Plus, every 30-pound bag of Love Litters will last up to 6 months, saving you money. Transform your pet care routine today, friends. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/litter. One more time, that's badlandsmedia.tv/litter. And breathe easy with a litter that loves your pet as much as you do.
All right, and we're going to talk now about Manly Cans. Are you tired of searching for the perfect gift for the men in your life? Well, look no further. Introducing Manly Cans, the ultimate destination for spoiling the guys with the cool stuff they actually want. Anniversaries, birthdays, or just for the heck of it, Manly Cans are more than just gifts. They're an experience. Each can is carefully packed in reusable packaging, including cans, burlap bags, and even a greeting card that doubles as a coaster. You can even customize your Manly Can to fit your man's personality. Choose from a wide variety of cans, and during checkout, add additional items to make it just right for him. Manly Cans is an unforgettable experience that supports other small businesses too. Join us in our mission to spoil the men in your life. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/manlycans today and give your guy a gift to remember Manly Cans, because men deserve to be spoiled too. One more time, that's badlandsmedia.tv/manlycans. And I've got the ammo can here. It came filled with meat. There was loads of different types of smoked meats and jerky and all sorts of stop it.
I was trying to turn it off and like you kept picking it off. Like
So it came filled with all sorts of meat, but you know, your manly can be filled with all sorts of different stuff depending on your guy's personality. And so as a proud dweller, a proud frat house dweller in a sea full of Y-chromes, I highly endorse manly cans as gifts for the men in your life, because all my Y-chromes, they fought over it.
I'm just saying.
At the end of the day, it's mine, so suck it, Y-chromes.
I just, as a man, I like getting cool stuff, and I like ammunition cans filled with beef jerky and cool shit. Like,
yeah.
I like it. Can confirm.
Agreed. All right.
Here comes the fun.
All right, so let's scroll down and
dun, dun, dun. All right,
where's the title? Is there no title on this?
It is there it is. Is impact valuation the silver bullet for sustainability?
There we go. All right, is impact valuation the silver bullet for sustainability? What is impact valuation? Well, how are we going to value impact is what that means. Managing and measuring impact makes good business sense. Boards and management now have access to unprecedented levels of sustainability information, but identifying what's important for impact management is complex. Businesses, standard setters, and capital market participants all have a role to play in developing standardized methodologies for impact valuation. So they're saying this out loud now, that they want to change the metrics and they want to focus on outcome-based metrics. That's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to measure the impact. But when the impact that you're measuring is carbon offsets and fluffy clouds, fluffy clouds versus streaky clouds, and hashtag man-made climate change. When you're redefining metrics to make stuff that is not valuable, it's deceptive, in my view.
Absolutely. Like, it's kind of like when you go to a pawn shop and like they severely undercut you for something and they're like, no, that's the value, my friend. And you're like, wait a second, what just happened here? Same thing.
Yeah. So I'm just going to read a little bit of this and then we're going to look at more kind of across industries. What, how does this show up in the industries and sectors? And then we're going to talk about the Olympics, because it all sort of comes to life when we talk about impact valuation as it relates to the upcoming Paris Olympics. Managing impact makes good business sense. There is a growing recognition that over time, externalities become internalized and directly affect a company's cash flows, its access to finance, and potentially its license to operate. And new reporting requirements will shine a light on how well businesses are or aren't managing their impacts. So that right there, wait, don't scroll yet. Hang on a second. So that right there, new reporting requirements, we're talking about the regulatory landscape, reporting requirements within the regulatory landscape. And it's not real clear whether we're talking about from a nation state level or from some sort of global metric standpoint. The World Economic Forum obviously deals with global business, and many global businesses that we consider to be U.S. companies, with strong U.S. history, a lot of those companies have foreign regulators. There are many U.S. Financial services companies that are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland, for example. And so when the World Economic Forum is talking about new reporting requirements, you can see that they don't get into a lot of detail here about who they're talking about, but they are talking about the regulatory environment changing the way that changing the way that they're measuring their impact, which, as this says, may directly affect their cash flow, their access to finance, and their potential, potentially their license to operate.
Yeah. A couple weeks back on Eye of the Storm, we came up on one of the Q drops that was discussing, like, who audits all these folks, right? Like, who audits the UN? Who audits the World Economic Forum? So just as an example, when you see all these funds going to Ukraine or whatever, and all these slush funds set up, the UN has, like, basically their own kind of IRS that audits all these benevolent funds and makes sure they're all on the up and up and that there's transparency. If that doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy, I don't know what does. So basically, it's the fox guarding the hen house. Like, they set up all these slush funds all over the world, and then the UN is in control of kind of auditing all of it, which of course they never do. And it's all just hidden. And it's same thing with this shit. Like, you brought it up before you even started this article, that, like, all this stuff that we're going to be discussing today is stuff that's already been going on in the corporate world for God knows how many decades now. And they're just now, like, just talking about it all out in the open now, but it's stuff they've actually been doing years and years and years, sneaking in the back door with it.
So, I have never seen an audit report for the World Economic Forum or the UN.
Nope.
I doubt that they're actually being audited unless we can see that audit report. I will tell you that the global businesses are largely audited by four companies, four limited liability partnerships: PwC, KPMG, Ernst & Young, and Deloitte. Deloitte used to be Deloitte & Touche. They're just Deloitte now. And those for that audit work, they are paid by the people that they're auditing. On Tuesday, Brad and I are doing a live stream on a Supreme Court case for J6ers, but it's dealing with the obstructing an official proceeding law that many J6ers, most I think J6ers, have been charged under, which is a law it's a law that was put in place by Sarbanes-Oxley. Now, Sarbanes-Oxley was brought about to remedy the Enron Arthur Andersen scandal. And a big part of that was that it was kind of the Wild West when it came to audit firms also having consulting services and serving the client in both of those ways. So, for example, Arthur Andersen's, and these are not explicit examples, and in fact, I'll make it less specific, because I don't want to speak to this as though it's Andersen and Enron. It kind of is, but you would have the firm, the audit firm, that also has a consulting arm doing the, let's say, strategy development for the business, and then also auditing the business. That's a direct conflict of interest and can and did and still does, I would argue, lead to some very bad behavior in business. Yeah. Such bad behavior that you see Enron no longer exists, nor does Arthur Andersen.
Right.
So that's what the Sarbanes-Oxley law was intended to do. And Section 404 of that law put guardrails in place between the consulting businesses and the audit businesses to try to alleviate that conflict. What happened is that the audit firms adapted and, you know, created different business lines and maybe different corporate structures. But at the end of the day, a lot of the same work is being done by the same people. And they've just better sheltered their ability to be held accountable for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. They found better ways to hide and better ways better loopholes, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Today, boards and management have unprecedented access to sustainability information, but identifying what is important is a complex task. Across multiple sustainability topics, there are different measurement bases, and the data collected is often input and not impact focused. So is impact valuation, placing monetary valuation on impact, the silver bullet. That's a question we've been considering at SAP and PwC, both separately and working together. A simple language is needed to cut through the volumes of disparate data and unlock the potential for increased insights. This will help boards and management identify the hot spots across a range of KPIs and business activities, enabling prioritization of the issues that matter to who and need to be managed. A deeper analysis beyond the headline topics and qualitative judgments accompanying impact valuation can unearth hidden risks and opportunities, but all this requires a common yardstick or denominator, and investors seem to agree. That's a heck of a chart. There's like no comparison data whatsoever.
Here's this line. That's it. Note showing only agree and strongly agree responses. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, the irony should not, we shouldn't miss it, that this is an article about metrics and measurements. And we're just asked to believe that 81% of people want this, just like 51% of CEOs thought that pandemic preparedness was the most important you know, issue of our time in 2015, and yet none of them were prepared.
Yo, guys, Eye of the Storm Tuesday night. The review is going to be one Q drop with no analysis whatsoever. That's going to be it. That's it. Like, my God.
Oh, my
what
gosh.
What a joke. What's
fascinating is that they're paid bajillions of dollars.
Oh, my God. It's mind-numbing.
For their analysis. And, you know, and this is the thing about globalism that drives me bananas, is that the same people that got the world to this point, the think tanks, the super smart people, the people that we talked about, I think it was last week when we were talking about Edward Bernays, you know, the hidden, the shadowy forces that constitute the real government. Right. It's the same people that have been in charge for over 100 years. It's the same companies and institutions. Sometimes they change names, but it's all the same people, and same interests. And they get us to the point of requiring globally of requiring a great reset, right? This is unsustainable. The world that we built is unsustainable. All these things we kept telling you, we have to globalize our supply chains. We have to globalize business. We have to make the world smaller, which is obviously going to increase its carbon footprint.
If this world that they've built for us sucks so bad, isn't that kind of indicative of the fact that we don't need them controlling us and telling us what the hell to do?
Well, yeah, but they're never going to let go of power.
Oh, silly me.
As long as people listen to them, as long as people and, you know, business owners, shareholders, consumers place value in this idea that we have to measure, instead of relying upon traditional business metrics to determine whether or not your company is performing well, we're going to give you this whole new set of metrics about whether your company is performing well in terms of its global responsibilities to climate and social justice. As long as people still give that value, as long as people still value the impact of those efforts and want to prioritize them over traditional business impacts, it is they're still going to have power.
I have a metric for them. A percentage of my ass of which they can kiss all of it. That's my metric.
Yeah, you know, it's bold and brave for you to say that.
I know
it doesn't
I
really matter though, because the people like we're, so. I mean, everything goes back to elections, right? We the American people, the only way we can really influence this is with our purchasing decisions and with our vote. Our vote doesn't really matter anymore. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not able to purchase nearly as much as I used to be because they made money worthless. So,
yeah. I had to go to the store the other night to pick up some cat litter, some milk, and a couple like essentials, but non-major items. And it was like $75. And excuse my French, but I was like, what the fuck are we even doing here? Like, I've got 6 things in my cart that are $75 that 2 years ago were like $30. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I noticed that too, that like I used to run into the store for something. And I would joke that I can't go to the grocery store without spending $35. Like, I can't just run in for something and come out with less than $35. Now it's like 90.
Right.
And it's the same stuff. It's like run in to buy, run in to buy a handful of things. And
when we moved into this house in September of 2019, a 20-pound bucket of the Tidy Cats cat litter was like $12.99. That same 20-pound bucket of Tidy Cats cat litter, or 30-pound bucket of Tidy Cats cat litter, is now like $19.99, $20.99, something like that, in a span of 5 years. It's clay and dirt.
Like, it's globalist. It's globalist clay and dirt, which is why you should buy Love Litters. American company. Downcycling. I don't know. If a cat's peeing on it, is it an upcycled product or a downcycled product? I think we could debate that all day. You and I certainly could debate that all day. But
I'm going to say it goes all three. It's upcycled when it goes in the litter box. It's recycled when they're using it. And it's downcycled when it goes in the trash again.
Yeah. But that's like, but so not to, you know, just make it all about our sponsors, but you and I both use Love Litters, and I think it's product. A great tool, and I'm going to make it part of the show now. Because it is, you know, so it says in the ad read for Love Litters, you're giving this wood a second life. It's wood destined for landfills. And so it's coming and has another purpose. Now it's an American company, with Americans running it and manufacturing the product. Your money is going directly back into our economy and not used to prop up agendas of people that hate you or seek to destroy your way of life. That is a simple choice that people can make between Love Litters or a global litter product, which is all, you know, PG&E or what, you know, whatever the handful of corporations that actually have all the are.
I've gotten to a point now where I've like, when I first started with the Love Litters, I went like 25% Love Litter and then 75% because one of our cats is 15 years old and she's kind of like set. And I don't want to like,
stuck in have, ways.
Right. I don't want to have her like, okay, one day your litter is all this pine litter. And then she starts using the bathroom all over the house, but I've got it up to about reverse of that now. So about 75 mm-hmm. Love Litters and 25 the other, and she's just like getting right along with it. And so soon it's going to be like all the way the other. And it's exactly what you, it's not just that it gets rid of the cat urine odor smell. That's awesome. Don't get me wrong. But the fact of knowing you're supporting a small American business and you're not catering to the globalists, I know it sounds silly as hell with something like cat litter, but that's exactly how they've gotten us, is with these like small little incidental things you think don't matter. That's exactly the point, so that you won't go on a hill and fight for them. And then they start creeping in on, say, the cat litter, and then, well, go try to find a bag of food on the back where it doesn't have bioengineered food product in it now. Yeah. And that's how they've done it.
And there's a reason pregnant women can't touch litter. Right. I don't think pregnant women would have any problem with Love Litters. Love litter. It's just wood. Right. Maybe, you know, cleaning cat feces and whatnot is not good for pregnant women, but there is a problem with traditional litter products, the amount of chemicals and things that are in them that are dangerous for pregnant women. I loved that. Can't clean the litter box. I'm pregnant.
Is it any coincidence that if your cat comes down with a urinary tract infection, your veterinarian is going to tell you, you might want to use some newspaper and cedar in their litter for a little bit, as opposed to actual cat litter? Like, I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and obviously it's from the dust from the litter, but yeah, cat litter, and you know, I still use some of it, but the traditional like mainstream stuff has a shitload of chemicals in it that you got to think is every time your cat is in there 3, 4, 5 times a day, it's just getting dusted up and put into their little lungs and nasal cavities and everything, man. It sounds weird, but I promise you, they don't give a shit about our pets either. Like there was last year around this time, it came out that the UK government was considering putting down pets and dogs during COVID to stop the spread of COVID. Like, I'm not talking about stray cats and dogs. I'm talking about people's pets. They had a way, it was like a plan B or plan C thing where they were going to go door to door and confiscate people's pets and put them down to stop the spread of COVID. They don't care about us. They don't care about our animals, period.
Yeah. And Adam says things, how dangerous are they for cats then? Excellent question. And one of the things that I think, you know, we definitely did not intend to make this whole show about cat litter, but it works. And we're going to go with it. When you consider the current litter products, right? The clay and you know, whatever is all in there, all of the chemicals, the kind of value statement is that you have, you can clean your litter box less often because you're going to have it all, you know, it's going to neutralize the odor and you're going to be able to keep all that feces and urine in your room longer and not be bothered by it whilst breathing in the dust that every time your cat uses the litter box, they're kicking up. Right. That's right. Going into your air. It's going into your air conditioning. Probably it's, you know, being recycled throughout and all of that. The premise of that is convenience. Like everything else they've sold us, all the other horrible things that they've sold us, like mail-in voting, the premise is convenience. Oh, this is, you know, way more convenient to do it this way. But what are you sacrificing? Well, in the terms of a litter, you are potentially sacrificing your health and the health of your pets. And in terms of mail-in voting, you're sacrificing democracy. So we've got to stop prioritizing convenience. And I think this is, you know, a big problem in America.
Yeah.
Well, that we have prioritized convenience as a virtue while at the same time with our mouths, we say nothing worth it comes easy.
Right. Then the convenience thing, catering everything toward convenience, ties right back to metrics, because how do you think they've shifted everything toward convenience with their polls they take and their metrics? And then they use that to, well, here, you can have this because it's more convenient now. Like,
yeah,
dude, I'm born and raised in the South. Convenience does not always mean good. Like, if you tell me, do you want instant grits or homemade grits? Going homemade all the time, and the instant would be the convenient version. Well, societies went toward the convenient version of everything.
Yeah,
patience is not a thing anymore. People do not possess patience anymore at all, period. I'm guilty of it sometimes too, but I know some people who are just like, oh my god, if it's not here right now, or I had one day delay in my package getting here, they're absolutely positively losing their minds over it. And I'm like, dude, calm down. Like,
yeah, patience and also, you know, perseverance and hard work, sticking with something, trying to see it through. People give up so easily right now because of exactly what you're saying. We have instant culture. Our culture is instant grits or instant oatmeal, right? Like it takes way longer to make steel cut, you know, legit oats versus the
like packet of oatmeal. Steamed veggies in your
packet
microwave
of chemicals.
Like it's insane, man. Packaged powdered dressings. And it's just, that's, you know, not how, and look at the state everyone has put it in. You and Kate talk about it on Raising a Nation. Sometimes she certainly talks about it on Clean Living. Like it's just, they've literally bamboozled everybody with all this shit in the name of convenience and metrics. And it's all actually destroying us and from the inside out, like diets, everything, absolutely everything. I saw a meme the other day of like this kid running away with a like pack of wolves behind him, and each wolf had a different thing over his head. It was like fluoride, forever chemicals, this and that. And it's like, yeah, that's basically what it's become. Like,
yeah. We have a Rumble rant. Bubba V Bird. It's clear that the government foxes have installed hidden gates with fox key locks in all of our laws. Well, they're certainly trying, I think. And, you know, so we have allowed the government to get so out of control in the United States of America that there is, there's not even a real debate over division of powers and jurisdiction any longer. Not when it comes to, can the federal government do this, or can the state government do this, or can the local government do this? I live in Colorado, so I'm pretty blackpilled on this, but they'll do whatever the hell they want. And you have to fight them in court. A good example of this is, you know, I'm ragey over the disarmament stuff, but let's set that aside for a second and look at Jack Phillips, the Christian baker of Masterpiece Bake Shop, who didn't want to create, it was against his principles and his religion to participate in a gay wedding. He was sued for not doing it. He fought in the courts, lost, went to the Colorado Supreme Court, lost, went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they said, this is bananas. What are you guys doing? Overturned it. He comes back home from the U.S. Supreme Court to the state of Colorado, goes back to work at his bake shop, and now the entire thing starts all over again with a trans cake. Because it's not about rights. There's not a shortage of bake shops in Colorado that could make those people's cakes for them. It's about harassing Jack Phillips. Because he holds beliefs that the commies see as unacceptable beliefs. And that's what's happening with the Second Amendment bill today as well. We had Representative V. Hill, who I believe identifies as non-binary, and was behind a lot of the gender bills that were coming out this term. But she stood up and said, she read from the Colorado Constitution and interpreted that language to say that there's no right to concealed carry. And then at the end of her remarks said, I have to be honest, I don't share the same passion for this debate as the rest of you, but I'm committed to trying to solve the problem of mass shootings through basically she was saying that she's looking for loopholes. She's looking for loopholes to be able to bring about the disarmament agenda, recognizing that it is largely unconstitutional. And that's what we see happening. And it's gross and disgusting. Why don't we hit our next and final sponsor? Sure. I think I got to refresh. My computer's being a dick again.
Ugh, crazy computer. Let's do this. This folks, Badlands has put together a documentary with Adam Riva, and it's not a documentary about Badlands, but kind of a documentary about what we've all kind of been experiencing. And it's going to debut at GART. And after GART, it will release publicly for free. So there's going to be no charge to see this thing once it releases publicly, but you can catch an early viewing with a GART virtual ticket. And I believe there's an early screening in Florida this month as well. So let's go ahead and take a look at this. Time of Deceit, my friends. Enjoy.
Investigating covert CIA operations, investigating the CIA in general, is now off limits to the press, unless you have what Ted Turner called proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which when you're talking about covert operations, you're never going to find as a journalist.
Conspiracy theorists, kooks, crackpots.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you.
We don't engage in assassinations and kidnappings and things of that kind. As far as I know, we never have.
One third of my staff in this task force was covert action, was propagandist.
Honestly, Twitter or X now is really where I get like all my news.
The unholy alliance between the intelligence community, social media platforms, and legacy media outlets.
And we will have to summon the same capacity to adapt to new circumstances and to meet changing times while upholding timeless ideals.
Fake, disgusting news.
It's one of those pieces of what we've seen around January 6th that is pushed by people that want to suggest that this attack was something other than what it really was.
This is why so many people can't stand the mainstream media, and why there's a hardcore animosity towards the media that is pretty much commensurate equivalent to the animosity towards Congress.
Was that your laptop?
For real, I don't know.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax? This is where he's going. The laptop is Russia, yes. Russia,
gentlemen,
Russia.
I want to stay on the issue of rape.
We have an army of digital soldiers. This was irregular warfare at its finest.
Fuck you. War.
Really can't wait to see that in Dallas.
Yeah, me too. And everybody, get your tickets. If you haven't already, you can get virtual tickets for GART for next weekend. And I believe there's an option just to get the premiere part. I might be wrong about that, but you can get you can watch the film with us next week. It will be premiering at GART, and then there's I think the next day a screening in Florida as well. So everybody get your tickets for that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be great. And it was edited by Adam Riva, who just did Flynn's documentary as well. Fantastic editor. It's going to be a fantastic film. I can't wait to see it.
Very cool. All right. So should we get into this next? So we're going to start talking about how we see these metrics coming up in other industries. So first up, we've got four charts to show why adopting a circular economy matters. What is a circular economy? Well, let's scroll down and find out.
I like how you had a verbal typo there and said charts, because that's exactly what this article is. One gigantic chart all over itself.
Oh, it's fair. I need you to watch for Rumble Rants, because I had to close everything to make my computer not crash. So I can't,
got it.
I can't look for them anymore. And that's awful. We also have some rants from last week that we'll get to at the end of the show. All right. In a circular economy, waste is reduced, reused, recycled, or remade. I have a feeling these guys are going to want us to drink our own pee soon. What do you think? All right. Waste from homes and businesses, including food waste, packaging, electronics, furniture, and clothing, is growing. Every year, more than 2 billion tons of municipal solid waste like this is generated globally, an amount that would stretch to the moon and back, according to a new report. That's hilarious. I definitely have to raise that that point with Patrick tomorrow. Did you know, Patrick, that the waste that the humans generate could reach to the moon and back, according to the World Economic Forum? It's going to be a fun conversation. Tune in tomorrow morning on The Brief. And as economies and populations grow, this waste is predicted to grow more than 50% to 3.8 billion tons a year by 2050. This is bad news for Earth, but waste contributes to the triple planetary crisis of climate change, biodiversity loss, and pollution. So put us back on, keep this up, but put us back on screen if you would. So at the beginning of this show, when we started this show, one of the first episodes, I think it was like the fourth or fifth episode we did of this show, was looking at polycrisis and how the World Economic Forum, and not just the World Economic Forum, but the UN, the EU, and all the NGOs, and a whole bunch of nation states, and the think tanks were all saying that polycrisis is the new way to look at the world. It's in our intro video, because this is... you know, where these guys are going. Now they're getting a little bit, you know, more defined in their polycrisis. We've got a triple planetary crisis. You're muted.
It took them four sentences of this article to bring up climate change. Four sentences. It's almost impressive if it wasn't completely retarded. Sorry, Mrs.
Well, everything that they do ties back to climate change, because going everything. Back to impact valuation, the, you know, remaking the metrics, redefining what right and just and equal / equitable, redefining what all of those words mean is very important. So this circular economy is the impact, I would imagine, the impact that we're going to be valuing. Right, evaluating, determining the value of the impact is going to directly relate to how little waste you produce, say, as a business, since we're talking about business. Now, I think that that's not necessarily a bad thing. But then again, what's waste? Because the environmentalists told us, you know, the OG climate hysterics told us that we had to get rid of environmental fail ever. We had to get rid of paper bags to save the trees. Oh, and they replaced paper grocery bags with single-use plastics. Single-use plastics are now the greatest pollutant that we have on the earth, according to the environmentalists that damn near mandated them.
You remember that time they replaced plastic straws with paper straws and then wrapped the paper straws in plastic wrappers?
Yes, because the straws were sticking up the sea turtles' noses. They still have not gotten rid of the rings, the six-pack rings. You know, they're less prevalent than they used to be. And sometimes they're in paper. Like if you buy food, or like sodas or whatever from Whole Foods, or like fancy beer from like a sustainable liquor store, your six pack might be have like some sort of paper or solid plastic, lifty thing so that fish can't get caught in it. But the six pack rings still exist.
Yeah. Those.
I always cut that. So I recycle all that stuff. And the six pack rings, I can't not cut every single one of those holes. Yeah, I've been successfully conditioned.
Yeah, I was literally about to say that. That's like, I can fully admit that I've been successfully brainwashed and or conditioned to cut every single six. I don't want a
little fish to get stuck in it.
Oh, I've seen the videos. It's terrible. I don't want to see a little fish, a little turtle or a little duck with a six pack ring around his head. And he's all like, man, my life sucks right now because some dumbass put this thing in the trash without cutting it. I never, even as a 10-year-old, I didn't want to be that dumbass. So yeah, I was fully indoctrinated into that one.
I know, but it stuck.
Right.
The other thing I don't get is going back to the grocery bag thing. So here in Colorado on January 1st, plastic bags were outlawed. So they brought back paper grocery bags, but now they're charging for them. I think we've talked about this before. It's very silly. Now, what's weird to me is that if I order Instacart and get my groceries delivered, they're still delivered in plastic bags. But if I go to the grocery store and buy my own groceries, I can't get a plastic bag. So what the hell?
I got nothing.
Are the Instacart delivery drivers breaking the law, or is there a loophole?
I got nothing.
Yeah, me either.
I got nothing. I'm coming up with less and less explanations for this clown world every day.
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. It's actually just about power and control and not about the environment at all. All right, let's see. What's the next? So the circular economy, we need to reduce, reuse, and recycle, which, you know, I've been told my whole life, and I'm sure you have as well. And as a reminder, if you want to reduce, reuse, and recycle, love letters.
Dun, ta-da.
All right, so let's go to the next article. And as, as always, all of the links that we go through are in the show notes. Industrial electrification. All of these articles, by the way, are like within 2 weeks of each other, and it's like within 2 to 3 weeks of today. Industrial electrification is a joint venture. Why collaboration across sectors is key. Oh boy. The green transition requires more than integrating new technologies into industrial processes. A paradigm shift is needed across the whole electrification value chain. Ooh, impact valuation. Partnerships and new financial models involving banks can overcome financial barriers to fulfill industry's sustainability journey. Innovative solutions with energy companies can extend to energy storage and heat pumps and self-consumption, electric mobility, process electrification, and green hydrogen. So we're moving everything to be electric because that's supposedly better. It's greener. Now, we don't really define what they mean by greener. I think it just means less of a carbon footprint, but then they don't really define what they mean by a carbon footprint because electrification requires strip mining the earth and child labor.
Right.
Well, the batteries literally require strip mining the earth and child labor to move everything to electric, but we're told that it's more sustainable.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, they totally care about the children and strip mining the earth. So we can trust them to not use child labor though, right?
No, they openly use child labor.
Oh, that's right. Damn.
Yeah. And we're just meant, it's not the the evil energy that comes from dinosaur bones in the ground, according to the retarded people.
Oil is abiotic. Moving on.
Achieving sustainability in industry can't be a lone venture, including when it comes to electrifying low to medium heat industrial processes like drying, Freudian, pasteurizing, washing, boiling, steam, bleaching, distilling. Every single process needs to be greener. Transitioning to greener energy sources is not just about already mature and commercially available technologies. It is a paradigm shift that calls for fresh approaches to partnerships, alliances, and shared visions across the entire electrification value chain, which is totally something they just made up. Industrial players are obliged to modernize their energy consumption through an electrification journey, which requires partnerships with banks to overcome financial hurdles and alliances with utilities that go beyond their usual roles, and also child labor and strip mining the earth in the most vulnerable, we're told, places on the planet.
I'm gonna fix that second paragraph. Transitioning to other sources of which we can tax the shit out of you for is not just about already mature and commercially available technologies, blah, blah, blah. That's what I hear in my head when I see this greener stuff. I see a never-ending, like, endless, infinite list of shit they can decide to tax people and governments and countries and so forth and so on for. That's what I'm getting from this so far.
Yeah. What's the carbon footprint of a multi-theater global war? And how are we offsetting that?
That's a good question, you know?
All right, get rid of this one. I don't want to read this one anymore. Let's talk. I hate them so much. I really hate them so much. Let's talk about Paris.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about Paris. Let's do that. Here we go.
This article is loads of fun.
I'm a bit worried. Were you saying that sarcastically?
No, the Paris article about
the Olympics. Yeah, I know. I'm saying, like you said, it's fun. I'm like, are you saying that sarcastically?
Oh, it is fun. Yeah, okay. No, I actually think that we're going to have a lot of fun with this article. So never forget what they took from us. They made the Olympics suck. Paris aims to host the most sustainable Olympics ever. Here's how the city is preparing. I wonder how. How is the city preparing?
Did they clean out their streets like San Francisco did before Xi showed up? Oh, wait, they did. We already talked about that, too.
I'm going to read instead of doing the bullet points.
You?
The 2024 Paris Olympic and Paralympic Games is this summer, and it will set new standards in sustainability, the organizers promise. However, with 800 Olympic sporting events, 15,000 athletes, 45,000 volunteers, 13 million meals, organizers understand the massive scale of their sustainability ambitions. In fact, they describe these ambitions as humanity's greatest challenge. Here's how the Paris Games will prioritize sustainability, potentially create a model for other events like it to follow. All right, let's see. The Games are already being described as the greenest in Olympic history, with Paris 2024 pledging to halve the event's carbon footprint compared to the average previous summer games. How do you think they're doing that, Paul? Are they going to have the number of events? Are they going to have the number of people involved? Are they going to have the number of meals they're serving? Are they going to have let's put it this way. Are they going to cut in half any single aspect of the event to deliver deliver upon their pledge of having the event's carbon footprint? What do you think?
No.
You would be correct.
That's planning revenue.
Planning the most sustainable games will mean limiting emissions to around 1.7 million tons of CO2. Previous summer games, including Tokyo 2020, Rio 2016, and London 2012, have emitted an average of 3.5 million tons of CO2. The Paris 2024 Organizing Committee says they're just making that up. Besting emissions from Tokyo's games will be particularly remarkable, as that event did not have spectators thanks to COVID-19. I also think it is freaking hilarious to think that Paris can do anything cleaner than Tokyo. Tokyo is the cleanest city on the planet. It is my favorite city on the planet. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful, and not any that Europe can't compare. You can't do it cleaner. I don't believe.
My sensei goes to Tokyo usually once a year, if not once every other year. And he's like, dude, it's hands down the cleanest, most spotless big city I have ever been to. You don't really feel it's like it also by population, if I'm correct, it's the largest or in the top three largest cities in the world. And he's like, you don't ever really feel super claustrophobic like you would in New York City or other places. Like, so yeah, the notion that Paris is going to be in any way, shape, or form cleaner than Tokyo is
not laughable.
Like 3.5 million tons of CO2. Come on. Like,
but they're not promising that. So let's get down to the next paragraph because you're going to see how they're going to accomplish this. Oh, okay. It's bullshit.
Okay.
In addition to avoiding. No, wait. Whoa,
sorry. Whoa, yep, there we go.
Calm, all right, yep. Calm down, Paul.
Hey.
In addition to.
It hurts my feeling.
In addition to avoiding and reducing emissions, the Paris 2024 sustainability strategy will incorporate offsets. Investing in environmental and social projects around the world. So Paris is going to pour money into global communist fever dreams and say that because of the money they poured into the fever dreams, that their Olympics is half as impactful from a carbon standpoint as Tokyo. That's not real, guys. That is an example of changing the metrics and putting a greater value on impact, which they're defining as social and environmental impact, putting a greater value on impact rather than the actual metric in this case, which would be CO2 emissions, which also, I mean, we could debate the realness of those metrics that they keep shoving down our throats. But that is this is kind of end stage. If you look at what Paris is trying to do, the con here that they're trying to do from a, you know, feel good social justice standpoint, that is the end state of impact valuation as the way that we are going to measure business going forward. Let's toss the quantitative metrics out the window. We'll make up new stuff that we can say is quantitative, right, like offsets. And right, then, you know, we're going to do some funny math and look at us. We're super virtuous. And in reality, they didn't really change much. All those people are still going to the Olympics in their private jets.
Because of course they are. I like how they call it the sustainability strategy, by the way. Pretty clever way for these neo-Nazis to insert SS into a project for the Olympics that are being held in Paris of all places. Like, it's just these people are I hate these people, Ash, and I try not to hate people.
Yeah.
I really do honestly try not to hate people, but I really, really hate these.
All right, I'm gonna put your Christian virtue to the test right now. Klaus Schwab is reportedly in the hospital.
Oh my God.
Now, as Christians, we are not supposed to wish for other people's demise.
Does that mean that we can't enjoy it if it's happening?
Also, we're covered by the blood because we're sinners in need of a savior, and we can't always achieve that bar.
What's the Bible say about Schadenfreude? What's it say about that? Like, I don't know, man. I think I would have to, I think in this case with this asshole, it's most definitely going to be a case of asking for forgiveness for big guy after the fact. Like, dude, if we could get him and OJ in the same week, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that would be an accomplishment. I think that I'm trying to figure out a way to pray for Klaus Schwab in the hospital that doesn't compromise. I mean, so first of all, we haven't independently verified this. This actually, ironically, I first saw a French tweet. It was in French and I had to translate it to see what it was. And it was Klaus Schwab is reportedly in the hospital. And some of the tweets said it's not looking good. And, you know, I tried very hard not to be happy about that. But
it lasted about 2.5 seconds for me. I was like, oh man, I just, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm feeling so hard being Christian right now.
Yeah, as Christians, we're supposed to pray that he will realize the error of his ways and repent and be, you know, prodigal son type figure, because we should want that nobody should actually, you know,
he's the trustee of our future. But he's the trustee of our future, though. So I think he's already anointed himself as that.
Yeah, I think that he is like the perfect central casting supervillain, especially when you see him and Ursula on the stage together. They're like the like image of Nazi men and women during World War II, right? Like
they absolutely are.
Yeah.
Except it's like a caricaturized comic book version of these super bad villains. He's like a laughably bad Lex Luthor. Like at least Lex Luthor got shit done. Like, at least he was somewhat intimidating. I put together a montage on Klaus, and at the end of it, it's Tucker Carlson shitting all over Klaus. Like, yeah, guys, I had to sit with this dude, and he's not commanding shit. He's a figurehead, which is exactly what Ash just said. And me and Ash have told you folks many, many times, these people, like, these folks like Schwab, Gates, Soros, these people that are all out in the public eye, they've got folks pulling their strings too that you've never seen their faces. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, you never know you don't know their names if they're the people that are actually in charge. Rose gently rebuking us in Christ, which I appreciate. If you love the Father, you pray for the souls he made, and I agree with that. We don't want anybody, even Bill Gates or Noah Yuval Harari or Klaus Schwab, to meet the eternal separation from the Father that all of us deserve if we are relying upon works. You think about Paul, right? Or Saul, I should say, who was persecuting and killing Christians until he wasn't. Yeah. And then he realized the error of his ways, and he went on to do the Father's will. And so it is, you know, hard.
Paul is like such a fascinating figure in the Bible to me. My name notwithstanding, it's who I'm named after. But, you know, he was literally, like, for lack of a better phrase, one of the biggest assholes in the Bible right up until he wasn't. Like, he was one of the most evil figures in the whole thing right up until he became one of the biggest spreaders of Christianity and light in the Bible of somebody not named Jesus Christ. Like, it's pretty incredible. His story to me does, and I'm not even like trying to relate this to Klaus Schwab or any of these people, but Paul's story does tell me how God can redeem a soul, and God can redeem you if you accept the Son. Like, it's incredible what he can do. It really is. Me and Ash are certainly not short on those stories, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the, you know, I talked a couple weeks ago with Kate on Raising a Nation about the OnlyFans girl, Nala. I was having a conversation with somebody earlier today about the prodigal son, and this, you know, there is so much in the people who claim to know Jesus, the people who claim to comprise the body of Christ, who have experienced his mercy and overwhelming grace for themselves, ostensibly, if they claim to be a member of the body of Christ, who can then somehow stand in the world and say that other people can't get it, can't receive it. You're too bad. You're too far gone. I was a sinner, but now I'm not, apparently, anymore. You know, I get to place myself in God's position of pointing out who does and doesn't get to access the free gift of grace and mercy. It makes no sense. And yeah. I think that there is a lot of that is being driven by a spirit of Antichrist, spirit of works. There's a lot of people who are in the church who claim to speak for Jesus who do not understand grace.
Right.
And we see a lot of that. So yes, God can even save Klaus Schwab, guys.
These folks think and believe that God's grace is limited. It's not. It's total. That's the thing. That's the beautiful thing about it. Like, I'm going to be a sinner until the day I die, dude. Like, that's just the way it works. We all make mistakes and do stuff we're sorry for. It's whether or not these idiots will ever come to that realization in this life, I highly, highly, highly doubt it. But at the same time, I agree with you about the work. We're seeing works of the Antichrist right now with the way Christ is being driven out and Christianity is being driven out. You know, Barbara was listening to a podcast the other night while I was working in my office, and it was Roseanne Barr and Jim Brewer, and I can't remember who else was on it, but they were getting into this discussion. And by and large, I like these folks. You know, I like that they're mainstream folks that are more well-known, and they align with conservative policies and things we're getting at. But even as we get deeper and deeper in this podcast, me and Barbara started realizing that, like, they're all sitting there kind of ripping on Christianity and Jesus as well. Like Jim Brewer. Now, to Jim Brewer's credit, I'm not going to sit here and shit all over him, because he did do a lot of red pill dropping during COVID and things like that. So I'm not going to take that away from him. But at the same point, when I sit here and hear him say on a podcast that the story of the Bible is a bit old and it's time for a new story, like, no, it's not time for a new story, dude. It's time to stop forgetting that story and start reminding people of it and what it means for humanity. And it just kind of took me back, because I'd never heard him say anything like that before. And he says that on this podcast. And then Rosie kind of comes over the top with her Jewish stuff, because she's Jewish, but I don't think she's like Zionist evil Jew, but she's still Jewish, right? And she actually kind of pulled a course correction on him a little bit. She was like, no, we don't need to go that far. Like, it's not, you know, we don't need to dismiss and get rid of Christianity. Like, we need to all work together for the Father. And I liked her answer a lot more than what he was saying, right? Like, she didn't shit all over Christianity, whereas Brewer took the chance to. And it's just shows you that there's a lot of people right now that just don't even want to receive the Spirit of Jesus Christ. I see it in a lot of folks I know in my personal life, man. It's like he's knocking at the door, but you still ignore him. I don't know, man. I certainly pray for those people, but at the same time, and it's kind of oxymoronic with all the hope and faith and message of hope and faith that I always push, but there's a certain people, especially in my personal life, that I have very low hope for that they're ever going to accept Jesus Christ, because they just seem to be so firmly dug in against him right now. And that comes from years of external programming and, you know, little comedy bits shitting on him or stuff in movies or slowly removing him from this and that. And it's absolutely designed.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that, so it's hard for me to respond to what they're saying. But based on what you're saying, there's always people that think we need to come up with some sort of new doctrine. Right. In reality, there's nothing new under the sun. And the, you know, humanity is not more enlightened than it was during biblical times, I don't believe. I think that we see evidence that potentially the ancient world was much more enlightened than we are.
Yeah.
And we're attempting to recreate. So why don't we play your Schwab video, and then we'll hit the Rumble rants from last week and we'll get out of here.
Sounds good. Yeah. Schwab video is a couple of videos up front of him being his typical douchebag self, highlighted by a couple of videos at the end, kind of dumping all over him. So enjoy it, friends.
As trustees of the future, we are responsible for advancing a world which is richer in possibilities, more equitable in opportunities, and more secure in its foundations. Moreover, as leaders in government, business, and society, we bear a particular responsibility to rebuild trust in how we assume our own role as trustees.
Pay insufficient attention to the frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole. The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack.
When we talked about the first industrial revolution, we had, of course, the steam engine, we had electricity, but now we have a multitude of technologies, all working together to a certain extent in combination Just think of the power of the combination of artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and big data. So it's a combination of the different technologies which really bring the fundamental change. And finally, I think we have to be prepared for a world where we see a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological dimensions.
Fast and loose
so
with the term
"our." So it
will
be a world integrating the physical, biological, and digital dimensions. So it will be a new world. And I'm looking for a minister in 10 years. Probably it will be completely different from what it is now.
The White House pointed to an aggressive online misinformation effort by a handful of bad actors.
Misinformation on social media is killing people.
Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
No one's safe till everyone's safe.
No one is safe.
No one is safe.
It's warrior safety.
No one is safe.
No one is safe. No one is safe. No one is safe from COVID-19 until everyone is.
99.5% of people are safe and will survive COVID-19.
The only positive thing out of this is we should be able to manufacture a lot of vaccines and...
Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
Because not everybody is vaccinated, nobody will be safe.
Normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population.
You know you're vaccinated, you're the smart ones, but you know there's people out there who aren't listening to God and what God wants. You know who they are.
The unvaccinated people, if only we had a vaccine against BS.
Literally sat there the other day with Klaus Schwab. Klaus Schwab. He's like 100 years old and like has no idea what's going on in the world, but he's like one of these guys who, speaking of mediocre, everyone's so afraid of Klaus Schwab. I don't think Klaus Schwab is going to be organizing anything again. He's just like a total figurehead. And he starts talking about it in his way, in his accent. He's saying, you know, I think it's so important that we follow in an ethical way. Always in an ethical way, of course, very ethical. I'm a very ethical man.
To redefine the moral scope of the capitalistic system.
Using technology to improve the human mind and implant the chips in the brain.
Can you imagine that in 10 years when we are sitting here, we have an implant in our brains? You all will have implants. We measure your brain waves.
You have no idea what you're talking about. You're like as senile as Joe Biden. What was so striking is that no one in the room was like, wait, what? You're fucking with people's brains? Like... Like, what are you even talking about? Who do you think you are?
Disclaimer, I put that in there just because Tucker dropped an F-bomb.
Yeah, I have a bit of a problem with Tucker's take there. And I wrote about this.
I bet you it's the same problem I have with it, too.
I think it was entitled the... What was it? I have to find it now. But talking about the dangerous stupidity of conservatives who think that the World Economic Forum is just some sort of think tank figurehead. Right. Because the World Economic Forum, and by extension, Klaus Schwab, it doesn't matter if he's a puppet. Of course he's a puppet. Of course he's a figurehead. But right. What he represents is the top-down change agenda, starting with the UN sustainability goals. Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs, driving them down, which the SDGs cover every aspect of our lives. There is not any part of human existence that is beyond the reach of the Sustainable Development Goals. And the Sustainable Development Goals were developed by the UN, are embraced and championed by the World Economic Forum, and are being driven down through every industry and every sector into every company in every geography in the world, and not just companies, because we're seeing them being driven down into education. I've talked about my son coming home with a project of having to write a picture, give a presentation on a sustainable development goal that he picked. This is not just dangerous stupidity of, you know, elite people who think big thoughts but don't have any influence. They have all the levers of control. They have all the levers of power. They occupy the seats of power in the world, And certainly in the United States of America, from a corporate standpoint, largely from a governmental standpoint, both federal and state, and NGO, from an NGO standpoint, certainly pseudo-governmental, it is very naive and I think negligent for somebody with the, you know, the brain power of Tucker Carlson to think that, oh, these are just, you know, silly rich people that don't really have any power. And he's just as senile as Joe Biden. And he doesn't know what's going on. Is Joe Biden not dangerous because he's senile? Of course he's dangerous. Jake Sullivan and Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett and Victoria Nuland and John Kirby and all of those people are behind him doing the evil shit in his crazy name. It's no different with Klaus Schwab. I think Klaus Schwab is more with it mentally than Joe Biden is. But at the end of the day, they matter because of what they represent, and what they represent is alive and well.
Yep, absolutely. That's basically where I was going to go with it, is he's got this huge platform and he could be using it to enlighten people to the real dangers of Klaus Schwab. And while I appreciate the jokes he was making about it, you're going to get that on the fence conservative, or that conservative that's not red pilled to the real dangers this shit represents. And they're going to see that clip and be like, oh, we don't need to take Klaus Schwab or anything they're pushing seriously because he's an idiot. And that's my problem with it. Now, before we run out of time, man, I want to move over to these rants because we had a few from last week. So I'll hit those really quick. Quilting Queen 17 from last week says, the Easter show is one of my all time favorites. I was sobbing tears of joy. Tone Ranger and I so appreciate the beautiful way you both shared your faith. Much love and hugs. Thank you so very much, my friend. We appreciate that. BS Girl 1950 says, in late, guys, but this video is BS. I was 16 then, and none of this was on normal teen minds. We have lived through JFK's murder and watching older brothers go to Vietnam. They were talking about the video we cold opened with last week, and you and I were wondering if that video was legitimate or if somebody put that together, and you and I were both kind of like getting the feels that somebody had put that together. So thank you for your rant. And
so just on that point, to me, that, so maybe it's real, maybe it's not, right? And I think we were both same on that, you know, kind of, what is this? But I did get a sense that those kids were responding to something. They weren't just saying fears that were on their mind, that they had been shown something. They'd been shown an end of the world.
Well, you brought up the one girl with like that PTSD response too, like that straight, like the girl that was staring off into the distance and her eyes were fixed and clearly traumatized.
Yeah. Yeah, that article that I was talking about, by the way, is Dismissive and Dangerous Stupidity from Conservative Influencers, quote, obsession with WEF is misguided. They have little real power, end quote. I put the link to that in the chat because it's exactly what we were just talking about with Tucker. And I think it's, you know, it's fine if Tucker is, you know, making jokes and drawing attention, but don't dismiss the global governors. They are the people who centralized our supply chains, globalized our supply chains. They are the people that moved manufacturing offshore. They are the people that moved IT offshore and business process outsourcing. They are the think tank behind our current dystopia, and they're the same ones projecting the future dystopia. So don't dismiss them, because they actually do have quite a lot of power. Maybe not as a WEF. Right. Oh, the WEF and Klaus Schwab don't have any power. Okay. But the people that fund it, the people that use the WEF as, you know, their front. And then you could talk about, you know, the Club of Rome and the Bilderbergs and the 300 and all the things. Right. Those people have a shit ton of power. They have all of the power, really, when you look at traditional levers of power. And our pushback as freedom loving people, both in America, where freedom is enshrined as a birthright, and in other parts of the world where they're having to fight for it, probably more than us, maybe in some ways less than us, because our countrymen are so apathetic to the fight. They're going to wake up in a camp one day and be like, how'd I get in this camp? I thought we were free. But yeah, I mean, that's like the globalists have reshaped the world. Someone, Real Rebecca Foster says, corporate America, here, let me put this on the screen. Corporate America gets paid to push DEI. This is the entire premise of today's show, is realigning the metrics, changing, remaking, reshaping the metrics to drive the outcomes that you want. It's not that they're getting paid to push DEI. They are, essentially. You're not wrong. But the incentives behind their business, and we talked about the Great Place to Work surveys, you can talk about the pension programs and access to capital. Even the World Economic Forum was saying your position on these things is going to dictate your access to capital. How well you are driving social impact is going to determine your access to capital in the future. So they're being incentivized, I would say. I would say instead of paid to push DEI, they're being incentivized to push DEI, and they're being punished if they don't. And that's a very important reality to understand about the corporate world. We like to think that we have free markets, and that the people's decisions, right, the consumers' decisions in the market determine what kind of society we live in, and what companies do well and what companies fail. And it's all determined on the freedom of people making their choices in a free market. I'm sorry to tell you guys, that's bullshit. The markets are manipulated. There are incentive structures upon incentive structures that drive what actually gets put before the consumer to make a choice. And then after the consumers make choices, a lot of times that's manipulated as well to tell people what's true. So understanding,
I'm totes gonna have to cut you off because we got 2 minutes left and like six rants left to go. And I want to make sure we get to everybody. And I think you're really, really going to appreciate this one from TYGT. Says, repeat, Ash Epp is the cat's meow, rocking smart and hot. Thanks. Indeed, she is the cat's meow. I love her. She's arguably my favorite co-host. And then we had BS Girl 1950 again saying we were up with the Beatles, et cetera, and chilling. This video and those kids were set up, or, and we just went over that. I think that was in relation to her first rant for us. And let me scroll down to these others. Kitsko says, see above, and what they were saying see above to was these are the same assets that put water in bottles, doubling trash, and pet poop in plastic bags that worked against landfill breakdown. Basically, yes.
100%.
Quilting Queen 17 says, perhaps the way to pray for the evil Klaus is to say amen to the Father's will. Klaus cannot live 1 second longer or shorter than God's plan. Then maybe we can toast when he is gone or converted. LOL. I like that approach. I like that. Tone Ranger says, Klaus and the WEF want to turn us into the Cybermen of Doctor Who. Follow the story. It's the end of humanity and doesn't end well for those races. Also, the Borg from Star Trek. Any lessons there? Yep. Predictive programming at its finest. That's what they're trying to do to all of us. And that does us for the rants. So thank you guys so very much for the support.
Yeah, thank you all so much. And everybody, please hit that thumbs up button for us. It looks like we're just right around 20%, which is awesome. But the greater percentage that we get, the higher we are on the leaderboard. And as we've said before, the thumbs up button drives a lot of the metrics here for us at Badlands and on Rumble. So please make sure that you hit that thumb for us. It's really important. Don't whore too much for likes, but it's not just because we want to think that you like us. It's because it actually impacts our ability to earn a living if you hit the thumb or not. So, thank you guys. And we've got nothing can stop what is coming. Not even us, apparently. Not even me. I can't even stop what's coming because Paul will shut me up and make me stop talking.
And I hate doing that too, but I had to that time. Now I feel like an ass for even having to do it. Like, yeah, guys,
I love that you will. I love that you will do it.
You guys make sure you check out Nothing Can Stop What's Coming. And we're pre-recorded next week because we will both be in Dallas. We have a fantastic interview for the friends next week.
Yeah, we do. So we have Chad Stewart coming back to talk about the fourth Britfield book, the movie, and how it's coming along in production and kind of what's next for the Britfield universe. It's going to be a lot of fun for you guys. We recorded it a couple weeks ago and it was an absolutely great conversation, as they usually are with Chad. Yeah.
I'll end on this because there was a comment in chat that Barb sent. Says, it was ClaireCat367 says, regarding JFK, War Room yesterday was all about the three coup d'etats beginning with JFK. It's interesting is me, Barbara, and Ash have plans next week while we're in Dallas to go to Dealey Plaza. So I'm sure there will be pictures and stuff that we're all going to take that'll end up on Culture of Change. So it's kind of a poignantly timed comment, my friend. And with that, I'm going to shut up and let us scoot out of here. You can take us home, my friend.
Yeah, have a great, have an absolutely great week, everyone. I hope to see a lot of you guys on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at GART. I'm super excited to see Paul and Barb, and you know, go hang out with the Badlands family. My aunt is going to be at GART, so be sure to be on your best behavior, please.
Darn it.
Don't freak out my aunt. yeah, I think that's it. Hit the thumb. We'll see you guys over in the next chats at Nothing Can Stop What's Coming and Defected. Following that, remember that change happens one conversation at a time. So be brave and speak the truth. We will see you guys later.
Friends, first off, thank you so very much for joining us. We truly and deeply appreciate your continued support and love shown to us here at Badlands Media. Don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video and help get this show on the Rumble leaderboard. Another way you can support Badlands for free? Become a Badlander. How do you do that? Head on over to badlandsmedia.tv, click Connect from the top menu, and then click Be a Badlander. Once you're registered, you can download clips from your favorite Badlands shows to share on your social media accounts. You can also print out flyers and stickers that you can hand out at an event and more. Let's keep growing our community because we are the news now and we take that very seriously. Thank you again from Badlands for your support and your love. It is appreciated more than you know.